You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
All right, we're on and we're going to talk football. We're going to talk football with Mark Leibovitz. He's the number one New York Times best-selling author. Of his last book was This Town. This is a great book. It talks about the NFL. He went behind the scenes with the Dolphins playing the late game. I read a bunch of the book this weekend. I'm going to finish it next weekend, so I outed myself. I've only gotten to halftime, Mark. But, Mark.
Oh, more than most people do.
Well, listen, welcome to the show. I'm having a great time. Wanda's having fun. We're actually going to try to go out and see you. We're going to try to see you. I hear you're appearing at the Miami Book Fair at 4 p.m. on Saturday. Of course, thanks to Lisa Paley for putting all this together. Mark, welcome to the show.
Outstanding. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to being there, especially when I'm based in Washington, D.C., and it's sleet and cold, and, you know, icy out there today. So, no, this is going to be great. I mean, I basically spent a sort of a three-year safari looking inside the NFL and talking to the commissioner and a lot of the owners, and you added me as a Patriots fan going to the break, but I should tell you, and because I know there are probably a lot of Dolphins fans listening, but I'm actually one of the good ones. I want people to read the book. I try to be humble. I try to be, you know, not as insufferable as many of my fellow Patriots.
Well, you almost get there, and it could be worse. You could be a Jets fan, okay? Let's call a spade a spade. You could be a Jets fan.
You know, there's a lot of room for understanding between our tribes. It's a common enemy.
Yes, there is. And we both actually have had a common experience because we had the decade where we were unbeatable with Dan Marino.
Yeah.
And we won't get into the debate because both guys are different. But what I did want to do is I wanted to really talk about, you know, you got this theory or theme that the league is under siege. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Ratings are supposedly sipping. Guys are taking knees. The president's taking pot shots. There's concussions everywhere. Ligaments are breaking. What's going on? Are we heading for 7-on-7 here?
You know what? Look, I'm not a doomsayer, but I do think that one of the reasons I wanted to sort of jump into this and look at the league and sort of, you know, like just look at the festival that is everything now is because there's never been such a great sort of coexistence between great just popularity and profitability, but also precariousness, because you get a sense every week, it seems, that there's a new sort of existential crisis that's going to end football as we know it, whether, like you said, you know, people kneeling or concussions or some kind of domestic violence incident or some kind of mismanagement from Roger Goodell and some of the owners. And you just don't know what's going to come next. So I wanted to sort of experience that, you know, I guess maybe last days of Rome feel around the NFL, which, you know, has this golden goose feel, but you don't know if it's going to continue forever.
Well, you know, you mentioned the pat, like it's a festival, and that's one of the things that I've really noticed, especially as they've gotten modernized pro player Joe Robbie Sun Life Stadium into Hard Rock Cafeteria over there. It's really become a full day experience. You get there at 9:30 whenever the gates open. This is what I do. I get there about 9:30. I wait. I get my parking spot. There's only a few that are under the trees. I get one under the trees.
Yeah.
I pop out my little thing. I put on the TV. All that stuff.
Yeah.
It's like a whole day thing. That's not going away.
No, it's not. And look, the NFL, and part of this is just their marketing strategy, which has been very effective in many ways, which is that they've turned the NFL into this year-round party in some ways. And I, you know, as part of reporting the game, I mean, I just sort of immersed myself in things like the draft, things like the scouting combine and the Hall of Fame inductions and the Super Bowl and things that, you know, they're like these annual, you know, events that they sort of build around and that, you know, tens of, you know, millions of people watch or come to, and hundreds of people watch, hundreds of thousands of people watch, or hundreds of millions of people watch the Super Bowl every year. And look, I mean, that's sort of, it's one of the ways that sort of generated this larger spectacle around the game, which has been, you know, very profitable for them. But I also think that if the game survives, and I think it will be because of the greatness of the game itself and in spite of a lot of the people who run and own the thing.
Well, you know, to me, it's like a lifestyle. That's what they're selling. I mean, that's what a lot of people sell today. They don't ever sell you a product anymore. They sell you a lifestyle. And so the NFL Network and the year-round stuff, it's a lifestyle now from, you know, are we going to win to the next week? It's how are we getting rid of the coach? I mean, at least in 30 cities, one city will love it.
Exactly. Well, look, you can also go through any American city these days on a Sunday. And, you know, like I said, I live in Washington, which is where a lot of transplants live, as there are in Florida, as there are in a lot of cities. And it's not enough anymore for people to just turn on the TV and watch whatever game is on. And you see people that have to dress exactly like the teams they're watching, and you see large packs of people in their Bears or Packers or Cowboys outfits going into the sports bar. And again, this sort of these little parades that go on everywhere in the country, and it's sort of, I mean, it's like a small version of just the masses of people descending onto a stadium in any number of NFL markets. But look, I mean, my day job is politics. I mean, I cover politics. That's my job at the New York Times, and I wanted a break from that. And I was just sort of shocked at how far inside I was able to get into the league in just a few years. So, yeah, it was a revelation on many levels.
So let me ask you this. Have you ever worn face paint? You're out in all those people. How about you? I've worn it. I did it before the national championship game when the Gators played. Yeah. That's why you got to play the Gator fight song, not this Penn State crap.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't even recognize it. I mean, there's actually very few recognizable fight songs, right? I mean, there are. I mean, I guess if you went to the University of Florida, you would recognize the Gator fight song. But I don't know. I mean, maybe I if I were a harder core, you know,
USC would be fine. Notre Dame, I don't care. Penn State,
Notre Dame, Michigan, like those are some pretty iconic ones. But to answer your question, this is actually almost an embarrassing admission, but I don't think I've ever had face paint.
How can you comment about them if you've never done it? Where's your kid?
Know. I mean,
you make your kid do it to you. It'd be great.
Can I? You're right. I mean, did actually, I think I just forfeited a great deal of ability, right? I mean,
you have no street cred if you've never taken the dive into being the total blood in fan with the outfit. The biggest outfit I've ever done was the Dan Marino jersey. I haven't really gone heavy duty on the outfit, but I did wear the face paint. The face paint was awesome.
That's pretty hardcore. I gotta say, look, I mean, I think in the interest of honor and integrity, I should probably do the exact opposite of what an author should do when he's trying to sell his book, which is suggest that listeners not buy or read the book because I have now shamed myself so by admitting that I've never worn face paint. Or if you want to be charitable and trust that I will put on face paint before the season's over, you can buy the book.
Well, you should put on the face paint. You should hit me with it on Instagram or on Twitter or whatever. I'll post it. We'll talk about the whole thing. I'll even maybe do a face paint thing next year. We'll have a great time. Oh no, we'll have a great time. Wanda will put the face paint. No, won't happen.
I'll take
You're
pictures.
You're not going to do it, Wanda?
No, I'll just take pictures.
Yeah, Wanda takes pictures. I'll be in Miami this weekend. How about if you guys show up?
We're there. We're already going to be there. We'll be there.
In face paint?
Well, okay, now I got to go to the store and get some face paint, but hell, we'll go. No, Wanda will take the pictures.
It's bad for my complexion.
Now, is there actually a kind of paint that is called face paint? Like if you go to a store, a paint store, there's like house paint and floor paint.
No, I think you got to go to Party City and get like the stuff they put on vampires.
Exactly. There party stores.
My whole life is Party City.
Yeah, I'll bet it is, especially being chasing those owners to the breakers instead of Boca thing. And by the way, they're right. I've been to both hotels for conventions, and you're right.
They both seem pretty nice to me. Well, no, so
of course they're nice, but one is considered opulent.
So the first NFL owners meeting I went to was at the Boca Raton Hotel and Resort in Boca, right?
Yeah.
This was in March of 2016, and all of the owners I ran into, the first thing they were talking about was, oh, my God, this place will not do. This is not the Breakers. This is, I mean, why couldn't they have it at the Breakers? And, you know, they were going to complain to the commissioner about this. And this is when I knew that I was in pretty rarefied company because, you know, the place looked pretty good to me. Like if anyone listening to this has ever been to the Boca Raton Resort, I mean, it's beautiful.
Fabulous.
Place.
The place is gorgeous.
But this was a existential issue inside the NFL, at least for the,
they're billionaires.
Yes, right.
I really don't know what a billionaire is
but
like.
But these people are not like you and me. I mean, I don't own a football team. I don't have $1 billion on my, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners do.
Oh, they all do.
Yeah, well, I've been, you know.
We got a real high-end show here.
Absolutely. So this was, in some ways, this book, and people hopefully will read it. It is lifestyles of the rich and famous geared towards what co-owner Stephen Tisch of the New York Giants calls junior high school for billionaires. That's what he calls the sort of membership of NFL owners, and it's true. And that was a world I was not at all exposed to, which, you know, the book gave me a great opportunity to have entree to.
Hey, Mark, can you hang with us and do another segment? Because we're going to take a break, but I'd really love to talk to you, maybe even give you the chance to lob a softball at you in the next segment.
I'm ready.
All right, Wanda, this is going to be great. Mark's going to stick with us. I got a lot of good questions, and hopefully you'll play a fight song that I like.
No.
anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way.